Today on Radio Gorgeous, we're going to be meeting designer and best-selling author Sally Coulthard. Sally is well known for writing books on restoring houses, designing interiors and creating outdoor spaces, but she has just published a book on hedgehogs called The Hedgehog Handbook. So let's find out why. Hi Sally, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hi Karina, thanks for having me.
Oh, you're more than welcome. So Sally, as I just mentioned, you've written lots of books, over 20 I think, lots of popular design titles and outdoor living books, including Shed Decor and The Little Book of Building Fires. I think this is your first book about animals.
It is, and it's a complete departure for me, but it was a subject I felt really passionate about, and it gave me an opportunity just to kind of explore a different type of writing, which is a kind of more descriptive narrative writing, and it's been a real pleasure.
Mm. And what was it about hedgehogs in particular that made you choose that subject for your first book about animals?
Well, it was partly because I'd been reading lots of things in the newspapers about the decline of hedgehogs. And as a kind of nature lover, that I didn't seem to find any advice about what I could do to help. So I felt quite powerless. And I thought, well, maybe other people feel the same way, because it's such an iconic animal, it's such a symbol of the British countryside, and yet, you know, we know it's declining, and yet no one seems to be able to do anything about it. So that was the premise behind the book, really, was just to kind of see if I could teach myself something about hedgehogs and how to help them, and then hopefully pass that on to other people.
Oh, fantastic. Actually, one of the things I was going to ask you is I learned a lot through reading your book. It's an absolutely beautiful book.
Oh, good. Thank you very much. That's really nice.
Really lovely. One of the things I learned was that they can swim.
Yes.
which I didn't know before. So I was going to ask you, what did you learn about hedgehogs that you didn't know before?
Well, they're such fascinating creatures. I knew very little about them, it turned out, but I knew a lot more about them by the end.
Yeah.
I learned that, like you say, that they can swim, they can climb trees. I learned about the fact that they have babies. They're called hoglets, which is very sweet. I didn't really realise that they were solitary creatures, that they like to spend most of their life alone. And I learned lots about things like they travel huge distances, miles and miles at night time foraging for food. I learned that they don't make good pets. And just lots of kind of really interesting things about this sort of shy, enigmatic creature. Mm.
And how did you go about researching then, Sally, to find out the information that you've learned?
So there's been some really good books already written about hedgehogs, and especially sort of hedgehog ecology. There's a chap called Hugh Warwick who's written a really fantastic book called A Prickly Affair.
It's a real
love letter, really, to hedgehogs and learning about their biology and ecology. So that was a good starting point. But there's quite a lot of research papers online and just kind of really digging into the sort of the facts and figures about hedgehogs. So it took a good couple of months, but we got there in the end.
And of course, you live in the countryside, don't you?
That's right. And I'm really keen that my kids see hedgehogs. And I know, although they are nighttime creatures, you know, as a child, I was used to seeing hedgehogs in my garden, and I'm really sad that most people don't seem to see hedgehogs in their own gardens these days. So living in the countryside gives me a good opportunity to sort of come across hedgehogs now and again.
Oh, lucky you. Very lucky you. What I loved about your book is it's quite different, isn't it? Because it takes you through a month-by-month account of a hedgehog's life, which is a quite unusual way to look at a natural history kind of subject, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a deliberate choice to kind of give the book a structure and to give it a kind of lovely sing-song narrative, because otherwise sometimes nature books can be a bit dry. And I wanted to kind of make people empathize with hedgehogs, not that, you know, as an animal, and follow its life and follow its trials and tribulations through the months. And it was just interesting because it made me think about what happens to hedgehogs during various seasons, you know, what happens during the summer, and then as they kind of go through autumn, that they have sort of can have difficult times, and how they hibernated and things. And so it was just a really easy thing to hang the story on.
Because what surprised me when I was reading it was that, because we're in October now, and I was thinking, even I kind of know, you know, you think about hedgehogs, you think with bonfires coming up, don't you, in November.
Yeah.
But what I learned through your book, which I didn't realise, was that some hedgehogs can be born now. There can be some babies still coming out this late.
Yeah, well, September's really the kind of late time for them to be born, which means that by October you really have, they're called autumn juveniles. Mm. And so they're young hedgehogs who haven't had time to get big enough, really, to go into hibernation in wintertime. And so often, this is actually the time of year when you do find the odd hedgehog out in the daytime. They're often these underweight autumn juveniles, and really they're the ones that can often need our help the most, because they're too thin to survive winter. But by putting food out and weighing them, you know, we can hopefully help and help them through those difficult times.
Because one of the things I really loved about your book is that you touched on it there, is there's lots of hints and tips throughout the books about what you can do to help. Mm. What would you say to listeners are the top three things somebody could do to help a hedgehog?
Okay, so the first thing I would say is to try whatever kind of outdoor space you've got, and whether you live in the city or the countryside, is to try and make your garden more hedgehog friendly. Hedgehogs like wild areas. Mm. They like, to be honest, a messy garden. So if you can cope and have with having just a messy area in your garden that's either a pile of logs or a pile of leaf litter or wildflowers.
Oh, my garden should be full of them then, Sally.
It'll be perfect. It's a hedgehog's dream. Or they like sleeping under sheds, things. Basically, they need kind of the opposite of a manicured garden.
Right.
So that's the first thing to do, is to kind of look at your garden and say, is there any part of this garden that I can give over to wildlife? The second thing that you can do is to, especially if you live in the city, to help hedgehogs travel from garden to garden, because this is a real issue. Mm. And hedgehogs are natural wanderers at heart. They need to roam over big areas to be able to find enough food to eat and to find mates in the summertime. And especially in city gardens, because people tend to have solid fences, hedgehogs can't travel from space to space. So there's this brilliant new initiative called the Hedgehog Highway.
Ah.
And it's basically just ways of either cutting a little hole in your fence or digging a little tunnel under a fence or swapping a fence for a hedge, something like that, which basically means that hedgehogs can travel from garden to garden.
What kind of size hole would you need to cut?
Well, usually the rule of thumb is that, and this is very old technology, but the size of a CD is perfect.
Oh, okay.
Something that size is just enough for a hedgehog to squeeze through, and hopefully it doesn't look too hideous in a fence, because obviously you don't want to be making massive holes in your lovely fence. But also, you can, if you don't want to make a hole in the fence, you can just sort of dig away a bit of soil underneath so that the hedgehog can squeeze under. They're pretty good at squeezing under spaces. But again, if you were thinking about replacing a fence, maybe think about replacing it with a hedge instead, and then that hedge will also support wildlife and insects, which can then also help to feed the hedgehog and other birds and bring wildlife into your garden. So it's just thinking about sort of softening, really, softening your garden and making it more nature friendly.
Which can only be good for everything and everybody.
Absolutely.
One of the things we're quite well known for at Radio Gorgeous is sex and relationships.
So there's a surprise.
Yes. The title, Radio Gorgeous, gives it a little bit away. But in your book, there's a lovely, lovely paragraph that I just wanted to read out. I just thought this was just fantastic. So if I quote from your book, you write, "It seems the hedgehog's sex life is one long, gloriously promiscuous, freshers week of clumsy advances and multiple partners." I just love that,
thank
Sally.
Thank you. Oh, brilliant. Thank you. That's really kind. Well, it was so funny, really, researching hedgehog sex lives, basically. You know, they're not the most romantic of creatures. Mm. You know, they don't pair for life. They have these quick kind of encounters, and then, typically the bloke goes away and the female is left caring for the offspring. You know, they have this kind of complicated dance around each other where the male hedgehog has to circle the female hedgehog time and time again, and she rebuffs his advances, and eventually he either wears her down and she gives in, or she wanders off disinterested. So, you know, it's not the most romantic of kind of animal pairings,
right,
really, but very funny to write about.
And what happens with all those spines?
Well, do you know, that's a question that philosophers for thousands of years have been trying to work out. And I think it was Aristotle thought that hedgehogs, the only way that could mate would be belly to belly. But apparently that's not true. And in a, quite a sort of complicated move, the female flattens her back down flat, and so her spines go flat, which then help the male hedgehog climb on top. But it's all very quick and over very suddenly.
And then they move on to the next partner.
And then they move on to the next partner. And they can have multiple partners in one night. So it's,
wow.
I know, it's just like Made in Chelsea, but with hedgehogs.
I like that, Sally. I mean, they're such lovely creatures, aren't they? And in the book, you've got some delightful illustrations that really, really bring them to life. And they're characteristics.
Oh, good.
And they're so endearing. People love them. You know, whenever you mention hedgehogs to people, people's face light up and then they love them. But what worries me, and you cover this really well in the book, is about the decline of hedgehog numbers. Mm. I mean, some of the figures you quote were just absolutely frightening. So you talk about, in the 1950s, there were 30 million hedgehogs. And that's just in the UK. And now we're down to less than a million.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about what's behind that decline?
The honest answer is we don't quite know. But it's if you do any kind of research into the ecology of the British countryside, it soon becomes apparent that the things that hedgehogs need to survive, which is basically lots of wild spaces and insects, those are the two things that currently are declining in the British countryside. You know, we hear about butterfly populations dropping and bumblebees and honeybees, and they all go kind of hand in hand together. And one of the things that the British public are very good at, and I include myself in this, is that we're very sentimental about wildlife and animals, but we don't make a connection between our own behaviour and the effect that it has on wildlife. So, you know, one of the points that I make in the book is that our pressure, for instance, the pressure that we put on farmers and things to produce cheap food is having a direct effect on the countryside and the way that we manage land and the way we manage our resources, so that, you know, wild areas are increasingly becoming more scarce. You know, we have more roads, we have more traffic on those roads, all those things which aren't conducive to you know, happy hedgehog,
more
basically
people.
More people,
because you mentioned the book, you call hedgehogs the canary in the mine, which I for me was a very powerful phrase about, you know, they're really signifying an alarm bell, aren't they, what's happening in the countryside.
Definitely, they're a sort of litmus test really about what's happening in the countryside. And I suppose my thought was that if we can let the hedgehog disappear, and the hedgehog is one of our favourite animals, what hope is there for animals that we tend not to like or we don't notice? And that, you know, the hedgehog is such a kind of symbol of the English countryside, and, you know, we're very fond of it, and, you know, lots of childhood stories are about the hedgehog. So, you know, if we don't really care about what happens to that animal, then what
happens to the rest?
Well, quite exactly.
And going back to yourself, Sally, because obviously you're really passionate about everything you write about, which is fantastic. I was interested to know how you became a writer, because I know you studied archaeology and anthropology at Oxford. Mm-hmm. So what happened next? What was your journey to becoming a writer?
So I left university not knowing what to do, as lots of people do, and ended up falling into television work and worked in TV for maybe 4 or 5 years. And it was a really fun, exciting experience, and doing lots of kind of lifestyle programs and history programming as well. And one of the series that I worked on was the Delia Smith How to Cook series, which was such a fantastic experience for, you know, someone fresh faced out of college.
That had so many millions of viewers at the time, didn't it?
It was huge. I mean, Delia was and is a phenomenon.
Did you learn how to cook?
I already knew how to cook. Thank you very much, Karina. My mother would never forgive me for saying otherwise. And through the kind of book and TV series, I met the editor of BBC Books, who were the people that published Delia's books at the time, who was a super lady called Viv Bowler. And I decided that if I wanted to have a family and a kind of more balanced life, there was no way I could stay on TV. And I've always enjoyed writing. I carried on writing at university, and I did a few internships at various newspapers and things in my gap years. And so I talked to Viv about an idea I had for a book about organic living, which this was a long time ago. This must have been maybe 1999 or 2000, when people were just starting to get interested in, you know, toxins in the home and organic living and just kind of living more ecologically and all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, I got my first book deal and the rest is history, as they say. So, yeah, I was very lucky, very, very lucky.
And you've written lots of different topics, haven't you?
I have. I know, I can't decide whether, you know, it's a bit of a scattergun approach or whether it's just because I'm interested in lots of different things. But I often equate my career to being like a primary school child, in that primary school children learn lots of different topics. Mm. And it's really easy to be enthusiastic when you're doing that kind of topic-based learning. And that's how I get interested in things, is I like to kind of find a topic and I get really engaged in it. And I find that most things are interesting.
Yeah.
You know, when you start to kind of delve into the surface and so, for instance, I've just finished a book about snow called The Little Book of Snow. And that came out of my youngest child, who's six. We were looking at the snow through the window one day at the farm in North Yorkshire where I live. And she said, you know, can it be ever too cold to snow? I thought, I don't know.
I'll find out.
There's nothing more exciting than an unopened book when they're completely flat and they smell fresh. And, you know, I'm probably getting into the realms of the weird here. But, you know, it's just such a great feeling.
Oh, I can understand. Yeah, that.
And I have them all kind of lined up on my shelves at home. And I think, I did that, you know, and I get a little sort of bit of pride.
And what do your daughters think?
I think, I don't know, that's a really good question. I'm really keen that they see mum work. Mm. And I'm really keen that they see that it's normal for me to have a life outside motherhood. Because I think it enables me to bring things to being a parent as well. And it's a massive part of who I am and my personality. And it's important to kind of keep your brain ticking over, definitely.
Absolutely.
So I've always, even when the kids were babies, I've always kind of carried on writing and carried on making time for work. I think they think it's very exciting when I get interviewed for the radio.
Ah.
They say, oh, Mummy, are you famous? I say, no, darling, I'm not famous.
Oh, you are, son.
Not really.
But they must learn through you, so they must know more about hedgehogs now than I imagine some of their friends at school do.
Definitely. And they do go to school sometimes and say, oh, my mummy's writing a book about this. And you can see the teachers kind of go, oh, here we go. But, yeah, they have got used to kind of, you know, poor old hedgehogs being rescued at home. And actually my 13-year-old daughter said the other day, why are we always having dead things brought to the house, Mummy?
Oh.
I think she's a bit fed up of kind of me rescuing animals and trying to sort them out and things. But I think it's quite cool that Mum works and, you know, does these things. But
I bet they do. We're talking about rescuing hedgehogs. I'm going to make sure we put some information on our website.
Fantastic.
About organisations that you list in the book.
Yes.
Of people can go to them if they find a hedgehog.
Yes.
So they know what to do in case of finding them. Because it's not as simple as you think, is it?
It isn't. And because hedgehogs hate being handled and hate being kept in captivity, which is why they don't make good pets. But it can also make them difficult to rescue sometimes. Mm. And also people are a bit nervous about handling them because, you know, there's the kind of reputation for hedgehogs being covered in fleas, which isn't actually true, or that they're, you know, they can be aggressive, and all of which aren't true. So one of the things that I've done in the book is to kind of do a flowchart, really, of if you see a hedgehog out and about in the daytime, which usually means something's amiss because you shouldn't really see hedgehogs out in the daytime, you know, what to do and whether to leave them alone or whether to pick them up or where to take them or how to keep them safe while you're taking them from your garden to wherever it is that you're taking them. Because they're fantastic escape artists as well. So, you know, sometimes you sort of rescue them and then they manage to kind of climb out of the box and disappear. So,
wow.
Yeah, so there's lots of kind of...
They're very resourceful, aren't they?
They are. I mean, that's why they've survived for so long. But they definitely need our help.
Yeah, they certainly do. And I'd recommend Sally's book to all our listeners. It really is a wonderful, wonderful read. I absolutely loved it, Sally.
Oh, thank you. Well, thanks so much for talking to me.
Oh, no, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming on to Radio Gorgeous. For more amazing interviews with amazing women, please visit radiogorgeous.com.